everybody. Bill Buckmaster along with Mr. Bob Dio, engineering and producing the show on the other side of the glass. And together we welcome you to this Buckmaster edition on Friday, February the 1st. Welcome to the Valentine's month. We are live weekdays, noon to 1. On 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted local news and talk. We have our worldwide live listening and podcasts of my show at buckmastershow.com. And of course, there's also live streaming at kvoi.com. Our media partners are tucsonsentinel.com, the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun, the Tucson Local Media Group and its portfolio, which includes Inside Tucson Business, the Tucson Weekly, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. Our Friday Focus interview today, State Senator J.D. Mesnard is with us, Republican from Chandler. He is chair of the Senate Finance Committee. Senator Mesnard was elected in November to the Senate after serving in the State House of Representatives, where he was the majority leader of the House. Joining me in studio today to speak with the senator is Dan Scheer. Dan is the editor of the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun. He is also the editorial director for the Sierra Vista-based WIC newspapers, that portfolio, nearly 30 newspapers. Dan, mainly in the West, correct?
Right, pretty much west of the Mississippi, 10 states.
But are you east of the Mississippi at all or no?
Yeah, we have one little office just the other side of the Mississippi in Louisiana.
Oh, so there you go. All right.
Barely.
All right. And later we will be joined by Jim Ninsel of the Tucson Weekly. But let's go now to Phoenix and the Buckmaster Show live line to Senator Mesnard. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing very well. I want to begin with the whole dust-up over the tax windfall, the question whether keep the cash or give it back to Arizonans. The governor says the state should be allowed to earn more money because Congress did overhaul the federal tax code. The governor wants to save the money for a reserve fund, but some in the Republican-controlled legislature believe the money should be returned to taxpayers in some form. You've been quoted as saying you're searching for revenue neutrality. How is that search going right now?
So we passed a bill out of the legislature yesterday that had every Republican on it except for one, that attempted to offset the $150 million tax increase by an across-the-board reduction in rates. And that's just because we believe that the actions by Congress were meant to be a windfall for our taxpayers, not a windfall for state government. We do agree that we should be saving for the future. We have a $1.1 billion surplus projected that we can use for that purpose. So this was about returning to taxpayers what's due.
But really, how much would go back to taxpayers? I mean, how can you quantify that? We're talking a few bucks here?
Yeah, so it really would depend on each individual's tax liability. So the federal changes to the tax code affected everybody differently. It broadened the base and then sort of reduced rates to offset what would be a tax increase by broadening the base. So we have the same base, or mostly, as the feds, and that's what we were proposing in the bill, but we didn't want there to be this tax increase. So what we came up with is a one-year-only, I would consider it a Band-Aid approach to getting through the current crisis, meaning we're in the midst of tax season and we need to give clarity to our taxpayers. But really, there's a longer-term conversation that needs to be had about what we do moving forward. We're only really beginning to understand the implications of these changes. And so I suspect that the conversation will be ongoing this session in the interim.
And then the governor has said that he is not in favor of this, but it has to get signed by him. Is it going to be a problem?
I don't know what the governor's going to do. We certainly hope that he signs it, because otherwise we're going to be back into this lack of clarity. The governor has said he wanted to conform to the federal changes, which we did. He did say that he wanted to keep the extra money and put it in the rainy day fund. We agree about putting money in the rainy day fund, but not in this mechanism. We felt that, you know, again, this wasn't meant to be something where we have the opportunity to take more at the state level from our taxpayers. So we sought an offset. We didn't seek a tax cut. We just sought a revenue neutral approach. And again, it was just 1 year to get us through the current year so we can continue the discussions in the future.
Could this have been avoided last year on kind of a routine vote to make the state and federal tax codes work together?
Yeah, it certainly could have, and I was advocating for that, as were some of my other colleagues, and we were very frustrated that we reached an impasse with the governor because we wanted to avoid this very situation where we have this time crunch and the uncertainty, and that's just a disservice to our taxpayers. So I had been pushing for a resolution to this last year. We didn't get it, and so at this moment, all I was looking for was a way to give us a little bit of breathing room, get through the current year, but we have to have this conversation of what our tax code looks like moving forward.
And it has to be done rather quickly. I mean, we are in the tax season already. A month is into it. So, I mean, what's your timetable?
Yeah, so that's why we passed it as quickly as we could out of the legislature. And we've been told the Department of Revenue can implement it in a few weeks. And to the extent that folks have filed their tax returns under the old rates, because the rates have now been reduced the same amount across the board, it's actually a relatively easy mathematical calculation. So Department of Revenue can actually refund folks money if they're due money, those who have filed, automatically without having those individuals to file an amended return. So that's a huge benefit. But obviously, we wanted to speed things up as much as possible. It's not every day you get a bill to the governor's desk in January of a session, but we did.
We're speaking with Senator J.D. Mesnard on the live line from the state capitol. He is the chair of the Senate Finance Committee. You are listening. Our listeners listening to 1030 The Voice, local news and talk. Dan Scheer, editor of the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun, is with me in studio. Dan, go ahead. Do you want to change topics at all?
No, one more on this, if we could. So this is being pitched as a cut to the tax rate, but what you are saying is really because of what happened on the federal level, it's just even. Is that accurate?
Yeah. That is. Now, it won't necessarily be exactly even for each individual person, but on the whole, what we did was we backed into a rate reduction based on the additional revenue we were expecting from broadening the base. And so, yes, on the whole, you end up with a revenue neutral approach, so not a tax cut on the whole, and again, just to get us through this year.
And then you had talked about that rainy day fund, and you propose raising the cap on that to 10%. Can you start from scratch and tell us what is a rainy day fund, what's the current cap, and why is it important to go up?
Yeah, great question. So rainy day is actually called the Budget Stabilization Fund, but we sort of the nomenclature is the rainy day fund. It's meant to be a savings account for when the economy goes south, which, you know, economies are cyclical. Eventually, even this 10-year expansion that we're seeing is gonna turn south. We want to be prepared. We don't want to have to make cuts to critical areas, so we want to have a savings. Right now, we have a 7% limit on what we can put in the rainy day fund. We're actually not even meeting that. We're closer to 4 or 5%. And other states are actually better positioned than we are. There are some that are worse, but actually most are better positioned to handle a recession than we are. So I think we need to up that savings so that we can weather the storm. The governor's proposed reaching $1 billion in the rainy day fund. My 10% limit, so increasing from 7 to 10, would get us about to that vicinity. And I just think it makes it clear we need to be preparing for the future. As well prepared as we were last time, we went through our previous rainy day fund of about $700 million in a blink of an eye during the Great Recession, and we don't want to have that happen again.
And you talk about cuts to critical services. What potentially, or what have we seen in other states that were not as well prepared as we were this last time?
Yeah, so you know, even we had to make difficult decisions as it related to healthcare, as it related to education. There were aspects of, you know, say like a school supplies. We normally fund school supplies each year, so they're up to date. We froze that for a period of time, saying, "Hey, it's not ideal, but you can use sort of the older textbooks because we just don't have any money." And Arizona, on a per capita basis, was hit the worst of any state, even worse than California in the country. And so, you know, we had roughly a third of our revenue wiped out in a year. So to put that in perspective, we had a $10 billion budget-ish and about $3 billion short, and our rainy day fund had $700 million. So a healthy chunk, but not nearly enough to close the gap. So that's why we resorted to accounting gimmicks. Obviously, the governor at the time, Brewer, proposed a one-cent sales tax, a temporary sales tax, which raised $1 billion. We did everything we could to limp through that year, and that was just the first year. So we want to make sure we're better prepared for the next go.
All right, we're going to take our break right here. Senator Mesnard will stick around for segment number two on the Friday edition of the Buckmaster Show on 1030 The Voice, local news and talk. This portion of our program presented by my favorite bakery in town. Dan, you know what bakery that is. That's Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Mona's located at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Owner Steve, chief baker, what a great job he does. A wide variety of European-style breads and pastries. They're open right now for lunch at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, on the web at monasdanishbakery.com. And of course, there's a link to Mona's on my website, a link to all of our great partners who make our show possible on 1030 The Voice, local news and talk. Be right back with Senator J.D. Mesnard from the state capitol in Phoenix. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
For the first time ever, explore the Biosphere 2 Ocean and Beach and see up close how we're using the world's largest indoor living ocean for research on the future of coral reefs and rising ocean temperatures. During this privately guided tour, you'll learn why our world's oceans are so important, why they're being impacted, and how the Biosphere 2 Research Center is addressing the global challenges of food, water, energy, and health. The University of Arizona Biosphere 2 tours daily, biosphere2.org. This is Bill Buckmaster. I'm passionate about travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. And when I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport. With 9 airlines flying nonstop to 22 destinations and easy one-stop connections, I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient with competitive airfares, and there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com. The Regional Transportation Authority has a 35-member Citizens Advisory Committee working to identify transportation priorities for the region and will be seeking public input on those priorities before too long. These priorities will help guide development of an RTA continuation plan. The current RTA plan and half-cent excise tax will continue through June 2026. To learn more, please visit rtamobility.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. It is our Friday edition, and we always start the Friday edition with a Friday focus interview with a newsmaker who's been in the news this week. And Senator J.D. Mesnard, the Senate Finance Committee chair, has been in the news over this whole debate or the dust-up over this tax windfall. Dan Scheer is here, editor of the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun. Dan, did you want to pick up on the so-called rainy day fund? You had another question about that.
Yeah, actually, I want to go back to, you mentioned a $1.1 billion surplus, and I know that our state legislators down here had been talking about that before the session. Is there that big of a surplus, and what's going to happen with it?
Yeah, so there is about $900 million in what we would categorize as one-time funds and $200 million in ongoing, and the difference obviously being whether we invest in one-time or ongoing expenditures. So right now we're in the midst of really the beginning stages of developing the budget. The governor put out a plan. A healthy chunk of that surplus did go to the rainy day fund. He wanted to get it to $1 billion from the current amount, which is just under $500 million. And then he has various other spending priorities, investment in education and some what we call career and technical education areas in particular, as well as salary increases for public safety personnel in the correction system and DPS. So he has some spending priorities, but certainly the largest chunk is going towards saving for the future. And I can tell you in the legislature, many of us are on board with saving for the future, but we also are sensitive to the debt that we currently have, and we'd be interested in paying that down with some of those one-time funds. Some of the accounting gimmicks we used in the past, for instance, a rollover regarding education funding, we'd be interested in revisiting. So a lot of different ways to apply the. It's a sizable surplus, but it could go very quickly as we go into the budget process.
There are some rumblings out there about a potential recession starting in 2020. Is that being talked a lot about at the legislature, and how real do people think that is?
Yeah, so we, even the last couple of years, as we began budgeting and looking at projections that showed revenue just off the charts, we're still trying to be sensitive to the idea that we were on the longer side of an economic expansion. In terms of the average, we were well beyond, and then now I think approaching a record expansion. And it may have been anemic in the beginning, but nevertheless, it's extended for quite some time. And so rarely do you ever project, you know, when the economy is going to go south, and yet we know that it does. So we just have been trying to be sensitive to not allow spending to get too carried away before the economic recession of what we call the Great Recession. We actually again saw massive revenue, and we weren't projecting any sort of downturn, and so we were spending actually beyond our means. And this is outrageous to think about now, but we actually dipped into the rainy day fund during this economic expansion, which just made it that much more difficult to deal with the recession that came. So we want to make sure we avoid doing something similar this next time.
Senator Mesnard with us on 1030, The Voice, local news and talk. It's the Buckmaster Show. I want to talk about texting and driving. The tragic death of that officer has put new attention towards something that former State Senator Steve Farley, as you know, Senator Mesnard, had talked about for years, getting a ban on texting while driving and talking while driving on a mobile device. Where are we on Senate Bill? I believe it's 1165.
Yeah, so there are sort of three categories that people tend to fall into when trying to address the real issue of distracted driving. You have the texting ban approach, which Senator Farley really pursued. You have a sort of broader approach, which is just requiring hands-free. So it's not just about texting. You couldn't even be talking on the phone if you're holding it with your hand. And then you have my own approach, which is going after the issue of distraction without regard to what is doing the distraction. So it doesn't single out a specific activity. But it does say, hey, if whatever it is you're doing doesn't relate to driving and is causing you to be a danger on the road, then it's not okay. And you can be pulled over for what essentially would be the equivalent of a speeding ticket in terms of the violation. So it's too early to say which approach sort of will make it through. There's a lot of support for my what I call my distracted driving ban. There's support for Ms. Brophy McGee's approach, which is the hands-held, ban on hand-holding your phone while you're driving. A lot of folks overlap, but some folks are one camp or the other. It's really too early to say how each measure progresses or doesn't.
This drought contingency plan that the governor signed into law, is this going to be the end-all word on this issue, or is this going to have to be readdressed, Senator Mesnard?
Yeah, definitely it's not the end all be all. We were up against a deadline, and this was a reasonable result from lots of discussions. The water issue is going to be ongoing, obviously, being a southwestern state. But water agreements in the past have usually taken years to come to agreement on. You got to deal with not only your state's population and the divergences there from rural to urban and different industries within the state, but you got to deal with other states, and even you got to deal with our nations to the south of us that also are impacted by the Colorado River. So a lot at stake. I know that there will be ongoing water conversations, but we were able to meet the deadline given by the feds as it relates to specifically the drought contingency plan.
Here's Dan Scheer of the Green Valley News.
So basically what happened on Thursday is that we got the feds off our back by meeting that deadline. Now, as a state, we have to figure out how this is going to play out. Is that really what's going on?
Yes, I would definitely agree. But you also have within the state different water authorities that aren't always in agreement on the right approach to water and sort of end up in these kind of turf battles. You got the Central Arizona Project, you got the Department of Water Resources, and then again various industries out there. So there's been a lot of conversation that had begun even before the feds put this DCP deadline in front of us. We still need to see how it plays out, because it wasn't just Arizona that had a deadline. The other states around us did as well. So we've got to kind of wait and see what the reaction is now that we've passed what we did.
I think it really opens the door to the whole discussion, Dan and Senator, about where does agriculture now fit in the early 21st century? And I know, Senator, your home district is an area that still has some agriculture. There's some dairy operations there in Chandler, and it's kind of nice. I like to go through that area and see those green belts there. But you do have to wonder, where does agriculture fit in Arizona's future?
No, it's a great question. A lot of people don't realize the amount of agriculture we have, especially in the Metro Phoenix area. You're right, there are parts, sort of in the outer edges, like, for instance, in the Chandler area. Chandler used to be a lot more agriculture, still some remnants there. But sort of if you're in the urban, dense, centers, you don't really think about the ranching and farming agriculture that we have that tends to be more rural parts of the state or suburban parts of the state. And so things do change. You have to adapt, and the adaptation itself can be a painful process. But at the end of the day, we need water, and we have to make sure that the message isn't echoing across the country that Arizona is running short on water, and so we have to have a good plan in place.
I think Dan and I are both wondering about the climate of the legislature this session. Dan, would you agree with that, one of your questions?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And we know that there are a lot more Democrats up there than there were before, but the Republicans still dominate. They still have the majority in the Senate and the House. So honestly speaking here, are the Democrats going to have a bigger voice in Phoenix?
Certainly they will. They will, to the extent that now with Republicans in the House, especially the Senate's not really different than it was. But on the House side, you went from a 35-25 majority to 31-29. Well, what that means is that if any Republican crosses over or whatnot, then you're down to 30 votes, and you cannot pass anything with 30 votes, at least anything that's partisan. So certainly it opens up the possibility of the Democrats having more leverage. It also, though, can have the effect of uniting the remaining 31 Republicans and sort of putting added pressure for them to stick together, knowing that if anyone falls off, they can't get anything done, at least within the caucus. So I think you'll see a mix. I think you'll see some issues where, you've got a lot more crossover, but then some other issues that just become even more hyper-polarized because there's no margin for error anymore.
Senator, I'm going to keep you a couple more minutes because I've got another question, and this is pertaining to where you no longer are in the House, but it was a dust-up between Democrats and Republicans over the time limit on the floor that lawmakers could speak about a particular bill. And I recall, I think it was the previous rule was you could talk for 5 minutes. I think it's been narrowed down to three. And there's no limit like that in the Senate. Is that correct, Senator?
That is correct. And it's interesting because you don't have a limit in the Senate. But for instance, when we were debating the tax conformity bill yesterday, it took like 3 or 4 minutes in the Senate side, despite the lack of limit, whereas you had a limit on the House side of 3 minutes, but it still took quite a bit more time. You know, I was Speaker of the House previously. I don't want to, knock any of the rules changes that the new administration and the new caucus has implemented. I'm sensitive to what they were frustrated about, and that is certain people that would literally use up all 5 minutes of their time, and whereas the vast majority don't even hit the 3 minute marker. So this was aimed at saying, hey, we want to spread it around and let other people use up 3 minutes times 60 members is still 3 hours. So you have still the potential for a healthy debate on a bill. But there was some consternation, some folks in the minority in particular feeling like they were targeted. But the rule does apply to everybody, not just those in the minority.
Okay, so water was a huge issue. That has been addressed now early in the session. The tax windfall still has to be resolved and rather quickly. What would be the marquee issues still then remaining after those two are put to bed?
Yeah, that's a great question. I knew you were going to ask me that question. I don't know that I could pinpoint it because it was so unusual to be starting this session with these two massive issues hanging over our heads. The DCP presumably is resolved. The tax conformity bill is on the governor's desk, and so now we're waiting anxiously to see what he's going to do with that. But presuming we get to move on, we'll transition into a more regular session. We'll be focusing on the surplus and how we can apply it in a responsible way. As you mentioned earlier, the distracted driving issue is going to be front and center. But you just never know. At the beginning of session, someone asked me what's going to happen. It's always interesting because by the time we get to the end, I look back and think, man, I was way off. It's so unpredictable every single year. But there are overarching themes, and distracted driving is certainly one. Education issues and focusing on career and technical education in particular is going to be another saving for the future. You're going to see that. So, well, I'm sure there'll be some interesting issues that pop up that I haven't even anticipated. But I'm predicting a relatively smooth session, and knock on wood, after these two issues are behind us.
So you've had a relatively fast start to the session, but you're not willing to go out on a limb and say we'll have a fast ending. Could we be there in May?
Well, I will say this. If the tax conformity bill that we've sent to the governor gets signed, I think that bodes well for a shorter session. If it gets vetoed, I think that's going to cause a lot of problems because the uncertainty will continue, and then we're going to be at this stalemate of, well, do we conform to the federal changes, but what do you have, you got this tax increase looming over our heads now, how do we handle that? And then that's going to be pushed into the budget conversation, and it will just tangle everything up. So I think the next few days will be critical at determining whether or not we're going to have an April-May end of session versus a May-June end of session.
All right, Senator J.D. Mesnard, thank you very much for spending part of your noon hour with us. I appreciate it very much.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
10:30, The Voice, local news and talk. Dan Scheer sticks around from the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun. Jim Nitzel has just walked in the building, and I can see him walking in now with because of our glass enclosed studio. I can see that Jim is in the waiting room from the Tucson Weekly. He will be joining us on our Friday roundtable portion of the Buckmaster Show. Let's take the break here. We'll be back with Dan, Jim, and me, Bill Buckmaster. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. choose Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
For the first time ever, explore the Biosphere 2 Ocean and Beach and see up close how we're using the world's largest indoor living ocean for research on the future of coral reefs and rising ocean temperatures. During this privately guided tour, you'll learn why our world's oceans are so important, why they're being impacted, and how the Biosphere 2 Research Center is addressing the global challenges of food, water, energy, and health. The University of Arizona Biosphere 2 tours daily, biosphere2.org. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Hi, it's Suzanne Miller from your Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona, here to remind you to start with trust and look for the BBB accredited seal when searching for a product or service. Did you know you can request a quote directly from any of our accredited businesses? With over 3,000 accredited businesses in Southern Arizona, you will find a business you can trust. Whether you need a product or service from one company or an entire industry, go to tucson.bbb.org and start your search today.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, our Friday edition on 1030 The Voice, local news and talk. I'm Bill Buckmaster. This portion of our hour, we do our roundtable, and we have Dan Scheer, who sticks around after our interview with Senator J.D. Messner. Dan Scheer, editor of the Green Valley News and Sarita Sun. Jim Ninsel is the executive editor of the Tucson Weekly, and he has other responsibilities too with Tucson local media, right, Jim?
I do.
Got your hands full.
I'm a media mogul, Bill. And can I just say, these new microphones in this new studio, it's a rich sound.
It is. And it's very rich, and if you go off mic just a little bit to each side, you'll hear it right in the headset. These are Neumann mics, I believe that's how it's pronounced. Bob, is that right? Bob Dio says I'm close on that.
You're in the neighborhood. I think they call them Neumann.
Yeah, they're from Germany. But
Germans.
Yeah, Germans.
Yeah, they say everything funny.
Yeah, very, very funny.
With these microphones, I feel like I'm in the studio with the Beach Boys or
there
something.
There you go.
I know.
Yeah.
Start layering some tracks.
Don't sing.
We ran out of time with the senator. I didn't have time to talk about what you wrote about in the skinny about there's this effort to kind of hamstring voters who like to turn in their early ballots on election day. And a lot of people still like to do that.
I think we had more than 250,000 in our last election, which is what slowed down the vote count.
So why the push against this from Republicans?
Well, They say it's simply because they want to count these votes faster. And the delays in counting votes in this last election cycle, where we didn't know who won the U.S. Senate race and several other races, play a role in that. Now, if you look at what happened, you had a lot of Republicans ahead on election night. Well, no, maybe not a lot, four at least in the statewide races and maybe some in legislative races. And what turned out happening is they counted more ballots. Four Republicans lost. And so I suspect part of the reason they want to do this is to perhaps a voter suppression effort. That's not what they're saying. They're saying they just need it out of the sense of efficiency. But you've got county recorders who are going up there and saying, you know, this is going to actually cause people to not to have their votes not counted. I think part of the problem is people have gotten used to being able to do this. And so if you change up the system, inevitably for a few election cycles, people are not going to catch on to what's happening. And I think that's a problem.
That's Jim Ninsel from the Tucson Weekly. Dan Scheer, this news release came out yesterday from Chuck Huckleberry's office. Actually, it came from the office, Pima County Department of Transportation, their director, that the county administrator will be asking the supervisors to consider funding road repairs now from the general fund. Is Mr. Huckleberry now walking back what he had previously said shouldn't be done?
No, but it's a very complex way of financing the roads. What he thinks is that there are a lot of people who live in incorporated communities like Sarita or Tucson, who drive on unincorporated roads, the road to Madera Canyon, for instance, and should that it is appropriate, which is the word he uses, to take money out of the general fund, out of the property taxes, and help pay for repairs on those roads. Now, generally, that property tax money goes for things like education and libraries, and generally not roads. And so our question, which wasn't addressed in the release, is if you take money out of that pot, then what happens to the entities that rely on the money that's in that pot? And we're still trying to get the answer to that question. So this is just part and parcel of what they've been trying to do over the last several years of trying to figure out how they are going to pay for these roads. Part of this is that they do expect more growth here, therefore more people paying property taxes. There have been layoffs. And through attrition, a lot of vacancies over at the transportation department. They could use some of that money. They might reinstitute that 25-cent property tax that they had for a year, which I think brought in, I don't know, 18, 19 million or something. So they're trying maybe several strategies to try to get this through, but we're still reporting on this one, and we'll have the answer at gvnews.com here over the weekend.
Jim, fix the darn roads.
Yours, yeah, please.
Yeah, there you go.
I think, again, looking at what happened in the last election, I find it amusing that the people who have the worst roads and probably complain the most are the same ones who voted against actually fixing the roads. But leaving that aside.
Yeah, that's another story, I guess.
It sure is. I think there is like a fundamental problem about the issue of taking property taxes that everyone pays into and just fixing roads in unincorporated areas. And I think that's something that obviously the county's wrestling with and trying to find a way to do it in a equitable manner so that the roads that are being fixed are ones that everyone in the community uses. That was one of the more amusing things in this last election when people were like, well, there's not enough money going to District 1 roads, so I'm going to vote against this. And you think to yourself, well, do you not drive anywhere else in this community? Do you never go to District 4 and go up Mount Lemon? Or do you never go down to Dan's area in District 3 or District... What do you got down there? District 3 and District 2, right?
We have
you got a little mix.
Three
mix
out of the
there?
Five are down there, actually.
Oh, yeah.
So we got a little bit of everything.
Yeah. So, you know, I think it's obviously roads are one of these things that people use, you know, whenever you go visit someone else in the community or you drive to your job or whatever. So there's certainly spillover there. And I think probably a lot of county money actually goes to stuff that happens within the city that maybe folks in the unincorporated areas don't necessarily appreciate. So I don't think it's as big a concern as the supervisors make it out to be, but I do think that at least they're trying to figure out a way to do it equitably.
And to Jim's point, I think that they said no in November to the bond method of paying for the roads because it was sending a message to the county. I really don't think that vote was about roads. I think it was just, we don't like you right now for whatever reason, and so we're throwing this in your face because we know it's going to make life much more difficult for you.
It's 10:30, The Voice, local news and talk. It's our Friday roundtable portion of the Buckmaster Show. Jim Nintzel is with us in studio. It's good to see Jim. Normally so busy over there at the Weekly, we have to do the phone interview, but I wanted him to see the new studio. I think this will encourage him to come over more often.
It's gorgeous, Bill, and, yes. And I love getting out of the office. This opportunity, indeed.
Lots still to talk about, and I've got about 5 minutes. I know, time goes fast. Quick take, Mr. Nintzel, on Kelly Ward being the new face and voice of the Arizona GOP.
Well, it's going to be fascinating to watch how she interacts with this newly appointed Senator Martha McSally, for sure. I mean, those two had quite a primary race, and I think that it moves the Republican Party in a much more radical direction. Kelly Ward is definitely a very hard right-wing individual.
And they keep talking about purging the McCain faction of the party, and this does it, apparently.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of people will tell you that politics is a game of addiction. Addition and addiction.
Maybe
it is addictive.
Sure,
no
it is.
Doubt.
There it is.
There's a lot of people who are hooked on it. Yeah. There's no doubt about that. Yeah. Kelly Ward being one of them. But I also think that that it's a game of addition and not subtraction. And I don't know that Kelly Ward is in the business of attracting new people to the Republican Party.
Bill and I were talking before the show, and Jonathan Lyons was dumped out of the GOP chair position. And do you think part of that comes from the fact that the Republicans in the state of Arizona took quite a drubbing in 2018? Is that how you handle a situation like that? Do you blame that one person?
Well, I don't know, because here in Pima County, Democrats did very well and they ousted their chair. So I think it was more about less about the actual results in this last election cycle and more about the ongoing tension between the Trump wing of the party and the non-Trump wing of the party, mm-hmm. and where that party is going and whether they're going to stick by Trump here in Arizona and what implications that has for them in 2020.
But you're basically saying that now this is not the party of Jeff Flake, it's not the party of John McCain, and don't they risk alienating an awful lot of Republicans who think those two were just fine?
Heck yeah, they do. I think that's something they definitely are going to be facing, and I think that you're going to see a lot of people becoming disenchanted with. I've already seen many Republicans becoming. Well, I don't know about many. I've spoken to Republicans who are disenchanted with the direction of the Republican Party. I think it's clear that there are Republicans who are disenchanted with the direction of the Republican Party because we have Senator Kyrsten Sinema, and for the first time in a decade, Democrats are winning statewide. So there's clearly there are people not buying what the Republican Party is selling these days.
We had the one of the organizers, Joel Feinman, who is the Pima County Public Defender, on the program this week, Jim, and he was here and he made it very clear, not on his time as public defender, but as his time as one of the organizers of this Making Tucson a Sanctuary City. I believe that the mayoral race between Steve Farley and Raheena Romero, one of the defining issues will be this sanctuary city issue. If indeed Raheena decides to back it, and Farley, who kind of indicated with me in an interview a week or so ago, he's not sold on it.
You know, I had my reporter, Kathleen Coons, reach out to all the candidates running for mayor to find out where they stood on this, and none of them got back to us.
Okay, so, there tells you what a hot potato this is going to be.
Without a doubt.
And how it's going to be a defining issue.
I think it is a hot potato.
Yeah.
Yes, without a doubt. I mean, it's going to be a major issue in the race. You keep in mind that the primary will be settled in August.
Right.
And this will be on the November ballot, so it's not going to be quite an overhang simultaneously with the primary election, but I do think where people stand on that will have some impact. And I think there's a lot of people who are sympathetic to the notion of taking care of immigrants in our midst, undocumented immigrants in our midst, who are uncomfortable with this particular initiative because they feel like it's opening a can of worms and it's going to bring more backlash than it's really worth. And they feel like the Tucson Police Department and the city council have really managed to work within the confines of what's left of SB 1070 in order to provide less intrusive policing when it comes to immigrants, and that this is going to upend those efforts with more from the state legislature.
Dan, I want to talk a little bit about Madera Canyon, a worldwide known for the birding. The birders love that area, especially this time of year when some of the more birds that hang out in the tropics find their way this far north. And why not? Our weather's so great. This news about a white-throated thrush, first time in Arizona, only the third time in the nation?
Right. And so we ran on out there to not see the white-throated thrush, but we wanted to see the people who actually would go out. Yes. And do, and we met these three guys who had gotten an alert on their phone about this. They were in Sacramento, jumped on a plane, got down here, met a family from Scottsdale, drove down here. There's about 50 people out there when we went looking for the white-throated thrush. And birders have a list, and there's no real rules about how you keep a list. So if you, some of them, if they hear the bird, they put it on the list. So others say you have to see it. So they each had their list. One guy had over 700 birds he's seen all around the world, most of them in the United States. But the culture of birding is really, really interesting, and this was an exciting moment for these people. And we got a call from the woman who was the one to identify it and report it to the Audubon Society and got it kind of confirmed, and then boom, people just flood in. So this is a really big deal, but the whole culture of birding, it's for me like football. I don't care about football. I don't even know who's in the Super Bowl, to be honest with you.
Oh my goodness.
I assume it's being played this year.
Yes,
however,
this weekend,
the culture, the culture of football is awesome.
It's actually the Thrushes versus the Patriots.
Yeah.
Okay. Dan, was there a picture of the thrush?
In our paper and online, yes, there is. It's a squatty little bird. It looks like a Christian Dior gown. It's kind of like, it's a little silly looking, but it's, you know, if you're into this, that's it's a very big deal. But again, it's the culture, and it's a great story.
Huge thing. Yeah,
Jim Nintzel, great
to
see you. Thank you, Jim, for coming into the studio. Jim Nintzel, we'll look for your work in the Tucson Weekly. Thank you, Jim. And Dan Scheer, thank you very much for your work with us, and hope you both have a great weekend.
Thank
Super.
You.
And Dan, we know where you will not be at 4 o'clock in front of a TV watching the Rams and the Patriots.
Oh.
I hope the Rams beat the Patriots. Anyway, we'll see.
Go Thrush.
There you go. Matt Russell's next with Weekend Watch on 1030 The Voice Local News and Talk.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com. The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year transportation plan is funded through June 2026 by a special taxing district, which is a state-established political subdivision within Pima County. The RTA plan and half-cent excise tax were voter-approved in May 2006, and the tax is collected within the district. More about RTA Citizens Advisory Committee's efforts to develop an RTA continuation plan at rtamobility.com.
Hi, I'm Ryan Hansen, and we are excited to announce that our annual travel showcase has a new location, new presentations, and exciting new offers. Sunday, February 24th from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Hilton El Conquistador, we'll have over 40 travel representatives offering a presentation and your chance to learn about where they go, who they are, and their exciting offers. I will also be presenting an unfiltered look at travel topics, so you do not want to miss the 2019 Travel Showcase from Bon Voyage.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
This is Moa Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Moe has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Moe for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Inside Tucson Business does such a great job by presenting Matt and what he writes about about food and beverage. And of course, Weekend Watch presented by Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, just a 3-hour drive from Tucson. Visit southwestnewmexico.org for the complete listing of the great places to stay and several dozen recreation opportunities in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Here he is, Matt Russell. He's got the old Speedo out as he gets ready to journey over to the Hawaiian Islands. How you doing, sir?
Is this a video call? How did you know what I was wearing? Yes, we're so thrilled to be able to return to our home away from home down on Maui for a week. So eager to leave the Sonoran Desert behind just for 7 days.
Oh, there you go. What's going on at Tankaverde Ranch?
Yeah, they are gearing up for their third annual Boots and Brews Craft Beer and Culinary Weekend. It all starts later today with a Thunder Canyon Beer Dinner on the Terrace. Now, there's also going to be a tap takeover in their Doghouse Saloon featuring beers by Tucson's Crooked Tooth Brewing Company and a Wyatt Earp Texas Hold'em Tournament. And the whole thing continues tomorrow afternoon when 9 Arizona breweries are going to be on hand to wash down the full spread of barbecue vittles that'll be served up in the ranch's Cottonwood Grove. Information and tickets are at TankaverdeRanch.com, but you better gallop over there soon. Get it, Bill? Gallop.
Yeah, got it. We're kind of the festival center of North America here in Tucson. Any this weekend?
Well, there's one, in fact, that is one of my favorite events of the year. It's tomorrow at the Tucson Botanical Gardens from 11 to 3. It's the 6th annual Savor Southern Arizona Food and Wine Festival featuring nearly 70 of the region's finest chefs and wineries and breweries and restaurants, highlighting some of their very best dishes and drinks, all to benefit the programs there at the gardens as well as the Southern Arizona Arts and Cultural Alliance. 4 hours to taste samples from 60-plus vendors. It's a tall order, but I'm up to it. Tickets at TucsonBotanical.org.
Let's see. 1 minute each for... Hey, that'll give you a real nice sampling for sure. It is Super Bowl weekend, tailgate time. What's going on there?
Nothing says Super Bowl like hot sausages and cold beer. And 1055 Brewing Company and Sausage House on Congress Street downtown has you covered on Sunday with their Super Bowl tailgate and viewing party starting at 3 p.m. Lots of culinary, craft beer, and cocktail specials, plus some of the best artisanal sausages available anywhere in the Sonoran Desert. Whether you're pulling for the Rams or that other team, the guys at 1055 are ready to serve you on Super Bowl.
Your buddy Jim Ninsel is with me in studio. Who do you like, Jim, from the Super Bowl?
Are you allowed to say Super Bowl? I'm not sure.
Oh,
it
I don't know.
It seems. I don't know. I think we have to call it the
okay.
big game.
All right. Who do you like in the big game?
The Thrushes are my team. The white-breasted Thrushes.
breast.
No, Patriots? Patriots in there again?
Oh, yeah, again. I'd like to see the Rams.
I'll go with the Patriots. Okay. My late mother loved the Patriots.
So there you go.
I'm sticking with them.
Oh, and Matt?
Jim Nensel.
Who are you picking?
Poorly misguided Jim Nensel. I picked the Redskins.
Of course.
But I digress. No, Rams all the way, guys. Rams all the way. It's their time. They got the youngest quarterback to ever win a Super Bowl if they are victorious on Sunday. How can you not get behind this?
There you go. Hey, catchers and pitchers reporting for spring training in a week or so. That's the good news.
What? Already?
Baltimore Orioles right. fans, I'm elated.
Have a great time in Hawaii. Thanks a lot, man.
Thanks so much, guys.
All right.
Aloha.
There you go. That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. The Buckmaster Show, a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, which is wholly responsible for the content of the program. Up next, our sports guy. Oh, my goodness. The most knowledgeable sports guy in town, Steve Rivera. Eye on the Ball is next. On behalf of Jim Nensel, my great friend Bob Dio on the other side of the glass, I'm Bill Buckmaster. Have a great weekend.